And until our minds enter the present moment, we just can't see them. The mind that is only wishing things were different is shut down to opportunities that are right here, right now. Two thoughts round this out. One, from Nathaniel Brandon, the world's top psychologist of self-esteem, who says, quote, "A goal without an action plan is a daydream," end quote. And then, the simplest directions ever given for success from St. Francis of Assisi, who said, quote, "Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you're doing the impossible," end quote. Number 39. Make your meetings more meaningless. Robert Louis Stevenson said, quote, "Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant," end quote. Everyone says meetings are boring. People automatically think their teams shouldn't have so many meetings. But the real problem is that people don't have enough meetings. People don't communicate enough. They wait so long to meet that their meetings drone on with all the backed-up sludge that has been saved up forever, and attendees go to sleep. Have your meetings be fresh and lively. Hold meetings often enough so that there is virtually no agenda that you have to follow. The more good fun meetings you have, the better your group gets, because you've increased communication and motivation. Everybody starts to understand each other better. It feels more like a team. People don't break off and balkanize into little groups of, quote, "our department against yours," end quote. Companies that are on the rise hold lots of meetings. The meetings are short, they're fun, and they promote understanding between people. People meet, and then they jump right back into the business. We know and coach teams who meet every single day, early in the morning when they all gather together. They have a kind of rally. They sometimes even meet late in the afternoon for a review. How did we do? How can tomorrow be better? And those are the teams that are thriving. If you want your meetings to be really exciting and good and fun, get different people to lead meetings. Grow leaders in your company. You don't always have to have the same person leading the meetings. You want to spread leadership around the company and give everyone an opportunity to be in charge. Think about meetings the same way football teams think about huddles. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to move forward and in this direction. Most companies run a no-huddle offense constantly. No one gets to talk or chime in with great ideas and observations. They're just winging it for weeks at a time, and then later they all suffer a long, boring meeting. Football teams huddle before every play, and there's a reason for that. Another kind of meeting you want to have more often is what we call the big picture meeting, wherein everyone learns the point of everything. What's the meaning of life on these premises? Where are we heading? The grand vision. How everything fits together. Most companies wait for an annual retreat to do this, but it's too important a motivator to wait so long to do it. And if you're doing business with partners, you'll want to meet often on the central issue of wealth creation. Most people never meet on that subject. They meet about problems. Soon they become a group of problem solvers instead of a group of wealth creators. Have this be the subject of a meeting. How does this adventure of ours expand, succeed, and get more creative? And if you are in business alone, as so many people are today, don't forget your meetings. Meet with yourself for the very same objectives that a team would meet for. Let your conscious mind and your subconscious mind get to know each other. Let the left side of the brain shake hands with the right. Harmonious convergence leads to wealth. Number 40. Go into hiding. Lord Byron said, quote, "In solitude, where we are least alone," end quote. The great psychologist Rollo May once said, quote, "It is an ironic habit of human beings to run faster when we have lost our way," end quote. In today's information-overloaded world, we have endless opportunities for input. It's easy for humans to create a whole life of reacting to input coming in from outside sources. We are bombarded. But what about our output? Will it just be a reaction to that input, or will it be truly inventive? The great business guru Tom Peters likes to urge his audiences to hold out for inventiveness that is insanely great. That can't happen from a day of fending off input. Most people just fend off that information like a hockey goalie fends off shots all day. So it's important to deliberately create a structure for countering that. A time to take the pads and face mask off and go think. Yuri was a personal trainer who said to us, quote, "I get my best ideas in the sauna. I don't know why this is. And sometimes I get my best business ideas when I'm on vacation. Why don't I get those ideas during the workday?" End quote. Yuri didn't yet see that the reason that phenomenon happens is that the sauna and vacation are the only times he gives himself to really be alone and allow ideas to float up to the surface. If he were willing to have the courage to be alone more often, he'd get even more great ideas. Therefore, it was important to teach Yuri how to counter his over-communicated life with deliberate pockets of silence, creativity, and isolation, to encourage him to go into hiding. Once he got the hang of it, he was delighted. You will be too. Your best ideas come to you in silence, so it's crucial to learn to sit alone and have creative thinking time. No computer and no TV, because those are distractions from creative thinking. They can be destructive to your journey to wealth. They have their place, but so does silence. People need to make room for that aha to happen, to create any wealth at any level. If you're a teenager looking for work, you can use the silence, too. Just take a long walk. Just you and the birds and the breeze, and ideas will come. One of the greatest sources of wealth is your own subconscious mind, but it needs time and space to express itself. It holds everything you need for wealth creation, and it's ready to help you. But if you have nothing but input coming into your mind all day, it can't help you. There's too much noise, and we live in an increasingly noisy world. It used to be that you could relax in an airport before a flight and gather your thoughts, but now there's nowhere to sit without the cacophony of cell phone calls and CNN pounding in your eardrums. It's an increasingly noisy world, and so silence becomes even more rare and valuable. Use it, and you'll have a secret advantage others don't have. You'll be using the half of the biological computer that others simply don't use. If you already have a little business of your own, silence is even more important for you because the temptation is huge to seize the day every day by encountering all those people and situations that seem to be crying out for your attention. Make sure you balance that with sanity. Go away. Sit on a park bench for an afternoon like a lazy person. Let solutions occur to you. Write them down. Don't bring your cell phone. Leave it in the car. The most healthy thing you can do for wealth creation is to be alone, worry about nothing, meditate, take notes, and be away from distraction. We coach small business owners to design ways to actually spend less time at their business, and their businesses always benefit from that. A lot of times business owners will say to us, How can I get more things done? And we say, do you have an office at your business? Yeah. Don't go into your office. Where in the world do I go? There's a secret place of productivity. It's called the library. You're not allowed to use a cell phone, and no one can talk to you. It's the most underused business tool today. The library is perfect. They have those little cubicles. It's quiet. There are a whole bunch of resources you can go there and read, and you can get a lot of ideas just wandering down the different aisles of the library looking at random topics. Let your mind roam free. It's amazing. The best strategy Sam ever had for increasing his creative money-making ideas involved his dog, Buster, who unfortunately died a few years ago. Sam called Buster the million-dollar dog, and he would walk him 3 times a day. Sam says, I would get terrific ideas just being able to walk with Buster. I was getting coaching at the time, and in one exercise, I had to write down how I used my time during the day. And so I wrote 3 long dog walks down, one in the morning and one in the middle of the afternoon and again in the evening. And it looked on paper like a huge waste of time. But that was actually the most productive thing I did all day, walking the dog. Microsoft's multi-billionaire Bill Gates takes a whole month off every year just to think. Has that been effective? $40 billion of personal wealth would suggest that it has. It's a habit worth paying attention to. A month off to do nothing. Because out of nothing comes something. Bill Gates's creativity moves forward more in that month off than in any other. Your time alone will do the same for you. 40 billion? Don't rule it out. Number 41. Keep thinking bigger. Albert Einstein said, quote, "The world we have created is a product of our thinking. It cannot be changed without changing our thinking." End quote. I recall my early days as a public speaker. I wasn't sure anyone wanted to hear me speak at all, much less pay for it. So I'd give free talks at Rotary clubs, business breakfasts, professional women's groups, faculty gatherings, anywhere. And finally, people would come up to me after my speech and say, "I enjoyed your talk today. I'd like to bring you in to talk to my company. What would you charge to give this talk at my company?" And I would say, $300. And they'd say, "Great." And pretty soon I was saying, $900. And they were saying, "Great." And it wasn't long before I'd say, $2,000. And they'd say, "Wonderful." It wasn't that I was getting that much better. It was really me being able to say it more than whether I was worth it. I had all those dark thoughts, like, am I worth it? Then I found out that you just have to be able to say it. And they can decide whether to pay it or not. And once they decide to pay it, you then make yourself worth it. 2.5 years after my first series of free talks, my training company was receiving $40,000 a day for me to speak to leaders at a Fortune 500 high-tech company. Believe it or not, Donald Trump did not start his real estate empire with a lot of money, but he always had one thing going for him that the people around him did not have, a huge capacity for thinking big. Now he lectures young people at business schools, and he always says, quote, "As long as you're going to think anyway, think big," end quote. Number 42. Break the binds of linear time. Marie Bainin said, quote, "We only have this moment, sparkling like a star in our hand and melting like a snowflake. Let us use it before it is too late," end quote. We coach individuals, and we also coach businesses. And whenever we begin a coaching session and our clients report that things aren't going well, we notice that their minds are either in the future or they're in the past. They're either wishing things were better in their heads in the future, Or else, they're thinking about things they wish they had done differently, and they'd like a do-over. They may wish they hadn't hired that person, or wish they hadn't bought that computer program. For you to succeed, it's really important that once you've got your game plan in place for the day, you learn to get out of the future. And once you've settled open-ended problems, you learn to get out of the past. Those two practices will allow you to bring everything you've got to the things you've decided to do right now. It's okay to check in once in a while with your future to tune up your ideal scene and to look at your specific goal, but that's just to check in. Don't stay there, because you'll start to get scared. And this is because the future doesn't exist. It's frightening to live, as most people do, in a place that doesn't exist. Consulting your future plan is just to look down at the map one last time before you take the wheel again and start to fly. It isn't to live there. The map is not the territory. The menu is not the meal. Your plan exists as a brief reminder of what you're up to, so you can get right back into the moment and the opportunity at hand. The more excellent you become at making the task at hand, that one thing that's in front of you at the moment, turn out beautifully, the faster you will succeed. All success occurs now, not in the future, not in the past, in the now. The more excellent you are at talking to that one person you're talking to right now, the faster your wealth grows, because that person carries the experience of you out to the world. It's your presence that impresses people, not your future. Zen teachers say that true mastery is washing the floor when you're washing the floor, or lying in the hammock when you're lying in the hammock. You're not washing the floor thinking about how great it would be to lie in the hammock, and you're not lying in the hammock thinking, oh no, I've got to go wash the floor. You're just doing the thing that's in front of you. For ego-driven and needy Westerners, this can take a lifetime at a monastery to learn, or you can learn it now. When you are preoccupied with the past, it leads to feelings of regret and resentment. Those feelings take you down to dysfunctional moods and states. You can't produce greatness while feeling that way. When you're thinking all day about the future, you are filled up with worries, desperate wishes, and dark fears. What's standing right in front of you is neglected or poisoned by feeling scared. People walk away from you thinking, well, I'm not overly impressed with that person. I don't get a very confident feeling that they've got what I want. The better you are in the present, the better your future will get. And the better you are in the present, the less emotional pull your past will have on you. So, once you've selected your activity from your delicious menu of options, jump into it, be focused on it, and bring tremendous creativity and excitement to it. Master the moment. Number 43, pay top dollar. William Arthur Ward said, quote, "A second-class effort is a first-class mistake," end quote. Sam used to be obsessed with coupons. He would spend enormous amounts of time sorting through them, looking for the tiniest advantage. He said, "I wanted to charge top dollar, but I wanted to pay rock bottom. Now I see it's better if it works both ways. I no longer mind paying a bigger price. As a matter of fact, when I'm negotiating with people, and I don't want to sound like a fool or something, but when I negotiate with business people, I don't try to strip them down to the lowest possible price. I say, listen, this has to work for both of us, and I don't want you to quote me a price that's going to be something that you can't live with or you're not going to make a profit on. I don't expect you to work for free. I certainly don't." To attract more wealth into your life, you want people you deal with to be well paid. If you're not looking to take advantage of people, in the future, that fairness will come around to serve you. Because if you have a customer that's not grinding you down to the lowest possible price, you appreciate that customer. You really value their business. In the future, if you can do something extra for them, you do. If you have two deadlines to be met, one from a person who grinds you down to the last nickel, and the other from a person you're making a good profit on, who are you going to deliver to? Therefore, you don't want to grind people either. And, psychologically, paying top dollar frees you up. The flow of money has a lot to do with psychology. And once you begin paying more, it becomes easier to charge more. It's quite disconnected if you preach charge a lot but are unwilling to pay a lot. I was recently asked to speak at a company event where the business owner's name was, we will say, Lester. The minute the negotiations began for the event, Lester started trying to reduce the speaking fee and extend the amount of speaking time. I began making adjustments to Lester's requests in good faith and began to sense something odd. It was the tone of his negotiations. Lester was edgy and suspicious, like I was trying to take him. When I talked to his vice president, the vice president said that he did that with everybody. He fights everybody for every penny. Lester was not atypical. There are many Lesters out there today, so scared about money that they fight everyone who wants it. They think their manhood, survival, is being threatened every time they spend money, so they end up poisoning their relationships throughout the day with their anger and their fear. I never did speak for Lester at that company event. They brought in a speaker who gave Lester a massive discount and then delivered what Lester later said was, quote, the most boring speech my people have ever had to sit through, end quote. Lester even tried to get his money back. I later realized that if Lester had gladly paid the original price, I would have gone the extra mile for Lester's company. After I had lunch with him, there was a lot that I saw that I could do to help his sales efforts improve. I was looking forward to making a real difference, but after he melted down and got neurotic about the money, I knew we had to part ways. People who are scared and nervous about their lack of money receive less money from the universe. The scriptural saying is, quote, to he that has, it shall be given. To he that has not, even that shall be taken away, end quote. Look at what was taken away from Lester, a chance to turn his struggling sales program around. Sam enjoys running his business success seminars well-dressed in the finest suits. He also enjoys pulling up to the building in a beautiful sports car, and it's not ego. It's an expression to his clients of prosperity. It's a visual symbol of the very place Sam takes them. Sam says, if they're paying me top dollar and people see me pull up in a nice car, or I've got some nice clothing on, or I've just flown in from the south of France, they pay me top dollar more easily because they just identify with me living at that upper level and being that kind of person. There's something about going first class in life that has a nice effect on your clients. They are warmed by it. You're not trying to play some discount guy role. It gives your clients a nice feeling that they've got the best person available. And people don't want to do business with someone who looks like they're going to be out of business tomorrow. You don't want to be taking advice from a person who looks like they're not making enough to take care of themselves. You don't want to feel that guilty. You want your money to get results. So you want to pay it to someone who embodies results. The symbol is important because it communicates. Sam started his business small. He was renting space to teach music and dance lessons to children. After his businesses kept growing, he began buying land and doing construction. He found that when it came to getting bids from firms to do the construction, there would be three quotes, and common wisdom says to always take the lowest bid. On the surface, it makes sense. Why pay any more than you have to? One contractor was desperate for Sam's business because he hadn't worked for a while and consequently lowballed the quote to get the business. He started planning the job for Sam, and 3 weeks later, when they were scheduled to start the construction, the contractor got a call from his buddy who said, "Hey, I got this work on this new hotel that's coming in. It pays great. You want to start?" I committed to this Sam Beckford job already. But to tell you the truth, I'm not making any money on this job, so I'm just going to drop it. Who cares? I'll be there to work with you on the hotel." So, a whole month was lost due to the paying bottom dollar syndrome. Sam says, "I'm not afraid to pay top dollar now. Paying bottom dollar costs too much." Number 44. See everything as practice. Samuel Johnson said, quote, "Happiness is not a state to arrive at, but a manner of traveling," end quote. The greatest soccer player of all time, Pele, was asked when he found time to practice with all the touring and promotions he was doing around the world. He smiled and he said, quote, "Everything is practice," end quote. And he later said that what he meant was this: the way he walks up to the plane, the way he treats the flight attendant, the way he deals with his anxiety during turbulence, the attention he brings to gathering his bags, the precision he brings to all activities, and the energy he brings to little things all constitute practice. Life offers us wonderful opportunities for practice, yet most people think it's worthless downtime. But that's why Pele became world famous and they didn't. So, if you've got an upset customer, if you've got a problem with a partner, or if you've got anything going on that you wish wasn't going on, you can reframe it in your own mind and see it as practice. If you have a problem at home, if you have difficulty with a relative many miles away who's calling asking you to help them with some unsolvable personal problem, it really is practice. If you drop the cup you are carrying and it breaks into a mess on the floor, it's another odd but useful form of practice. If you are stuck in a traffic jam, again, it's practice. Because you can have everything you do tune you to a truer vibration. There isn't anything that can't be practice for what you are going to do to create wealth. Sam says, "Anytime I'm in a bank line, I'll think, this is an exercise in patience. Am I just going to let it freak me out and get all mad and get up to the counter and lose it and complain that there should be more tellers and that this is unacceptable? Or is it going to be something that's going to increase my inner practice of quiet resolve and teach me to find peace internally and not in external circumstances?" Trivial upsets are a beautiful opportunity to study the relationship between thinking and being upset. Most people have the long bank line be the cause of the upset, but practice allows us to eventually master the observation that it's only our thoughts that upset us. Practice allows us to try thinking, "What a wonderful place to just chill and not be frantic, and I'll just stand here peacefully and let my batteries recharge and not have to be anywhere and not have to be upset like I used to be by a line like this." You can use anything in your world to practice becoming more mindful and better tuned to the true source of your emotional energy. Here's what two masters of the art of practice, Michael Murphy and George Leonard, have to say in their book, The Life We Are Given. Quote, "Practice your physical routine. Practice graceful communication. Practice planning. Practice meditation. Practice extraordinary service to others. Practice your professional magic. End quote. They also say, quote, when wisely pursued, practices bestow countless blessings. If we do not obsess about their results, they make us vehicles of grace and reveal unexpected treasures. In this, they often seem paradoxical. They require time, for example, but frequently make more time available to us. They can slow time down and open us up to the timeless moment from which we have arisen. They require sacrifice, but they restore us. While demanding the relinquishment of established patterns, they open us up to new love, new awareness, new energy. What we lose is replaced by new joy, beauty, and strength. They require effort, but come to be effortless. Demanding commitment, they eventually proceed like second nature. They need a persistent will, but after a while flow unimpeded. Whereas they are typically hard to start, they eventually cannot be stopped. End quote. Wealth flows to people who have inner strength and grace. It flows to those who have learned to master every moment of their day, not to those who have bad days and worry all the time. You can begin a total transformation of your life energy by seeing everything you do as practice. Number 45. Create your responses. Nathaniel Brandon said, quote, either you will make your life work, or your life will not work. End quote. We get contacted by a lot of people whose lives are not working. They want coaching. They want their lives to work again, but they don't see. When we ask them to describe what they think is wrong, mostly what we hear about is other people. Other people disappoint them, or tick them off, or scare them. We know right away why their lives aren't working. They are constantly trying to win the approval of others. A life of expectation is a life of disappointment. A life of trying to win the approval of others is a life of fear and reaction. Wealth is a creation, not a reaction, and therefore, it improves your capacity to earn when you learn to stop reacting to others. It's never your life that's not working. It's always just you. But that's the best news there could ever be, because you don't have to rearrange the world to make your life work. You just have to rearrange your approach. When the Dalai Lama was asked if he wasn't angry at the Chinese for taking over his country, Tibet, he replied, quote, why should I give them my mind as well? End quote. Some people think the Dalai Lama's answer to that question was profound. They think he was able to answer that way because of his advanced spiritual practice. But his is a response available to all of us. All we have to do is learn to respond rather than react. I can respond to other people, which has the elements of creativity and purpose in it, or I can react, which has the element of a teased animal in it. You tease a vicious animal, and he will react. It's completely emotional. Most people just react like that animal. They've descended into that low, automatic, defensive habit. And now it's just in their muscle memory to react. They get an email from the boss, and they react. The chemicals are launched in the body, and an angry reply shoots out of the lips of the person so people in other cubicles can hear it. Some people save their most unconscious, knee-jerk reactions for when they get home. The spouse says something, and they react. The child leaves a cookie on the carpet, and they just react to that. They were ready. They were waiting for something to react to. There is another way to live that's much wiser and happier, but it requires a mind shift, a shift up from the low gear of reacting, a shift up to the higher, smoother gear of responding. You get a nasty email. You might feel like reacting with a cutting reply. You are justified. The email was absurdly unfair to you, but that's just a reaction. Any animal can and does do that. Do you just want to be a stimulus response machine? You can become creative instead. Instead of reacting to the email, you will craft a response based on what you want the relationship to be, the big picture. Wouldn't your wealth curve be better served if your relationship with this person kept improving rather than going up and down, riding the waves of testy reactions and comebacks? Here's an example of a reaction. Quote, "This email is typically short-sighted and unmindful of the scope of work I've put in." End quote. Now here's an example of a response. Quote, "Wow, I really got it from your email how this is not a happy situation for you. Let's you and me talk it through. How about 4:15 in your office today? I look forward to talking to you." End quote. As you learn to create responses to people rather than just reacting to them, you'll notice your life starting to work for you. You'll notice your success starting to flow inward because there's no longer any more resistance to others. They all become part of the same evolution from fear to love. Love what you're doing, and the money will follow. Number 46. Invent a numbers game. Stuart Wilde said, quote, "The acquisition of money is not a serious business. It's a game that you play." End quote. Remember the long walks we took down the long trails as kids, through the dreary beauty of the dying leaves on the trees, and one of us shouted, "I'll race you to the barn!" And all of a sudden we were off. The tired legs and weary bones were no longer our reality. We had shifted reality with the words, "Race you to the barn!" Can you really shift reality? Isn't reality defined as something you cannot shift? Your mind, maybe, but not reality. Reality has to come through your mind to get to you. So yes, you can shift it. And numbers sure help, given that the universe is nothing but one glorious symphonic math equation. Numbers that are painfully precise, down to the penny, like our rent, our mortgage, our light bill, our car repair bill, and our grocery tab, are always other people's numbers. And usually, they're the only numbers that we take seriously. They're precise numbers that drive our activities, but they're not ours. And unless we replace those numbers or have them be insignificant compared to our own numbers, we're always going to live a life of reaction and feel like we're living other people's dreams instead of our own. If your quest for wealth is stuck, you can break out and increase your energy by getting a different kind of numbers game going. If you're stuck, if you're frustrated, or if things aren't moving in a profitable way, don't just try to do it better. Put a number up on the wall. If you're frustrated with recruiting, put a 3 on the wall. Now you're going to interview 3 people a week for the next 10 weeks. Put a big star next to the 3 on your wall every time you hit it. You've got a game going. If you've decided to create a certain number of new clients by the midpoint of the year, put that precise odd number up everywhere. These number postings can work with obtainable process goals such as how many calls a day you will make, or how many thank you postcards you're going to send out, or how many new customers you'll personally talk to, or how much money you'll save per month, or how many visits to the health club you'll make per week. Or they can be outcome goals, like the number that signifies increasing last month's income by 20%, or that number of new clients. And the more numbers, the merrier, because the more numbers you create, the more numerical targets you put into your subconscious mind. These numbers allow your subconscious mind to work for you, and it will do so even while you sleep. Notice how you can program your subconscious to wake you up at 5:55 in the morning. That's child's play to the subconscious mind. It can do bigger tricks than that in the daytime. It just wants exact numbers. With numbers, your life can take on a game element at work. Now you're responding to your own numbers rather than other people's numbers. It feels like a created life because it is. It feels good. Most of us are always reacting to other people's numbers. We get bills from other people, so we look at the numbers on the bill and we try to figure out when we're going to pay them. It's all coming from the outside. The mortgage company wants a number, and the daycare wants a number. Everybody wants something, and it's always got a number on it. The way to turn this around is to have all the numbers you think about be your own. Because wealth is going to be a numbers game anyway, why not have it be directed by your numbers? Numbers that you have put up there on the wall that you want to hit. When you wake up in the morning and see your own numbers, you feel like you're creating your own life, not just reacting to other people's demands. You'll no longer have a life of trying to hit other people's numbers. When we meet with salespeople to coach them, we ask them, what is it that they want to achieve? And if the salesperson says, well, here's what the company wants me to do, and here's where they've set the bar, and here's what I need to do for them to pay me a bonus, we finally say, those are all their numbers. We're not interested in that. What do you want to do? What numbers do you want to hit? Let's get your life into that category. And when we do that, the salesperson really picks up and gets excited. Soon, she's laying out her own strategy for success with numbers that are bigger than the company's. Sam says, one of the things I've been doing for years since I really started making substantial increases was to have some numbers right beside my desk that I look at every single day. I revise them from time to time. They're ultimate business goals. I want to hit this. I want to hit that. And anytime I'm stuck and I don't know what to do, I look at those numbers and I say, okay, what's one thing I can do to get me closer to that goal right now? And that's the one thing that can really be the magnet that pulls you back into the present moment. It doesn't have to be a list of every single goal you want to accomplish, but just a couple of key numbers at your fingertips. One of the best things a salesperson can do is stick those numbers on the visor of their car. When they flip the visor down, they're reminded of what the whole thing's about. It's not about going in and spending 2 hours with a customer chatting about the golf game they had this weekend. It's about the number on the visor. Your numbers reorient you to what you're up to. They serve you like territory coordinates serve a pilot or a missile launcher. Start putting them up around your house and office and feel the energy you get from them. Remember, it's not what a number is that's important. It's what a number does. Number 47. Start all over every day. Henri Frederic Amiel said, quote, all appears to change when we change, end quote. Never stop reinventing yourself and reinventing your profession. Don't let habitual patterns of thought keep you stuck at any stage in your growth. Start every day with a fresh start. Don't get into a rut. The only difference between a rut and a grave is a few feet. If you run a small business, or if you offer a professional service, or even if you're in an organization where you have a salaried job, ask yourself, how can I do this work in a fresh and innovative way? Because that's exactly how people get ahead. They come up with new ideas and do things in an innovative way. Don't just do things because that's how you did them yesterday. Be new to yourself every day. Refresh, reboot, and reinvent your work as often as you can. You can save what's good while trying all kinds of new things. This approach of continuous reinvention will keep your mind fresh. You'll be amazed at how many new ideas you get from taking this approach of starting over every day. Most people we coach have a secret life. In it, they think they will never change. They see themselves as permanent people, fixed personalities. They don't see how to challenge that. Like the great Leonard Cohen song, In My Secret Life, says, quote, I saw you this morning. You were moving so fast. Can't seem to loosen my grip on the past. I smile when I'm angry. I cheat and I lie. I do what I have to do to get by. But I know what is wrong, and I know what is right, and I die for the truth in my secret life. End quote. The truth is this. The mind shift out of that imprisoned secret life can be easy. You have a mind, but you are not your mind, so you can shift it, just like the gearbox in a car. The hard part is shifting when you don't think you want to. Many doctors say they keep recommending to their patients who suffer from depression that they start to get up and exercise, even a little, just walk around a little bit. But the patients are too depressed to do it. They don't feel like walking, they say, even though their doctors are certain that moving the body would begin to lift the depression. But somewhere, somehow, someone must do what he doesn't feel like doing for a true mind shift to happen. It's got to start somewhere. Someone has to do something they know they don't have to do. And the minute you do that, you have a fresh start. You're no longer who you used to be. Number 48. Know your customer better. Ray Kroc said, quote, If you work just for money, you'll never make it. But if you love what you're doing and you always put the customer first, success will be yours. End quote. Most people struggling with wealth deprivation are focused on themselves all the time. They focus on their shortcomings and their worries. To reverse that struggle, the trick is to get out of yourself completely. Try focusing on someone else. Start with your customer. What can you do for your customer today that would absolutely astonish and delight that customer? Even if you don't have a literal external customer to interact with, everyone you work with and talk to can become your customer. We all have people who are receiving the service of whatever it is we do for a living. So, we want to get out of our own self-obsession and get into the minds of the people we are serving. We can begin by asking, what could I do that would really help that person? Most people never ask that question. They're so focused on their own wants and needs that they don't see that there are people in life just waiting to be served. Those people are also waiting to reward that service. If you get out of your own mind and enter other people's, you'll find out what they will pay you for and why. The better you understand customers, the more customers will trust you, pay you, and increase their activity with you. If you're working at an organization where you don't deal directly with customers, you can concentrate your attention on everyone who can speak up for you and promote you down the line. So you'll get to know your manager better, your teammates better, and the people in the other departments better. know what really serves them and how you can help. Most people have so many layers of fear and suspicion of other people that they don't know them at all. But you can't really serve someone you don't know. So, get out of yourself, get interested in others, study their wants and needs. It's one of the fastest roads to the elevated moods that lead to wealth. Exactly why does your mood elevate? Because it's impossible to be depressed while you're truly helping someone else. The mind can't hold both things at once. And what, again, is the connection between elevated mood and wealth? Wealth flows faster to happy people because happy people are in elevated moods, and those elevated moods are where the best ideas come from and your highest energy. You can discover this immediately by trying an experiment. Get in front of your team and tell them they have a big problem and it must be solved. Then spend an hour discussing the problem and see what kinds of solutions you get. Then go in front of another team with the same problem but a different approach. This time you're going to brainstorm nutty possibilities and have fun thinking out of the box. There is no problem, but there is a subject you'll center the brainstorm on. The brainstorm, when done right, is fun. Everyone participates. It goes round and around the room at a dizzying pace, and the funniest ideas are celebrated. But something strange also happens. Your people are so inspired by the elevated mood of the room that they come up with truly creative ideas, real solutions. This is not a theory. We do this with groups we coach all the time, and they are startled to see the results. By transforming the subject from problem to interactive brainstorm, we create something magical. People aren't focused on themselves anymore. They're tuned into what the great psychologist Carl Jung once called the collective unconscious, that ultimate interconnected network of all minds at once. Number 49. Find out who you really are. Lee Iacocca said, quote, "What is it that you like doing? If you don't like it, get out of it, because you'll be lousy at it. You don't have to stay with a job for the rest of your life, because if you don't like it, you'll never be successful in it." End quote. Continue your quest for self-discovery, because the more you align your true talents with your work, the faster wealth is attracted to you. A lot of people make fun of self-help, New Age, self-discovery, and going on the inner journey. They ridicule it and say, "Hey, come on, that's woo-woo stuff. Get practical." But it's important to unpeel the protective layers you've built over the years. Find out who you really are. Discover how you want to serve people. Be conscious of your real loves and what your real talents are. Always know what you're really good at. As you grow and evolve, you'll keep finding out more and more about yourself. If you keep that self-inquiry alive, it allows you to keep moving very subtly into areas where you can serve even better and be more appropriate to making money. You don't drop everything you've accomplished. You include it and transcend it simultaneously. Because the more in alignment you are with what you were really meant to do for a living, the faster wealth will come to you. The old saying, "Do what you love and the money will follow," has proven to be true for us and for hundreds of our clients. Doing what you love doesn't have to require an immediate, drastic career change. You don't have to change overnight from one profession to another to have wealth begin to flow. It can be more subtle than that. You can start it right now inside whatever your current profession is. Keep moving to the part of the work you love and keep loving the part you're working on. Our client Rachel said, "I don't know what I love. I don't know what I want, and I don't know what I'm good at." Did you ever spend time really looking into it? No. I just seem to move from one crisis to the next. My life feels like it's always about what other people are asking me to do. Do you love always seeking their approval? Approval? It's never enough, so no. I mean, even when I get it, I don't trust it. It doesn't last. It makes everything be about their feelings, not mine. Good observation. You're on the right path. But doesn't money come from service? Yes, absolutely. But service is pure and free. It isn't an attempt to win someone over. It serves and moves on gracefully. This was the perfect time for Rachel to get out of her story that told her she needed to win approval. This was a perfect time for self-discovery. She could now really look into her heart and find out what she was good at. Once she did that, she was able to pick up her spirits and energy and direct them to greater success right away. She transferred to the part of the company she always wanted to work in and got an immediate promotion there. Self-discovery will do that. It has practical financial value, so don't wait too long to plunge in. Pay attention to the old Sufi saying, quote, "You have 3 days to live and 2 are gone," end quote. One of the few things Sam remembers from college was a course he took that studied a survey of people in their 80s. The survey asked, "If you could do your 80 years over again, what would you do differently?" And the 3 most frequent answers the octogenarians gave were 1, risk more, 2, reflect more, and 3, do more things that live on after me. They received that enlightenment in their 80s. You might just want to adopt it now. What would life be like if you did? What would happen right now if you risked more, reflected more, and did things that will live on after you? Number 50. Wash your brain clean. The Pali Canon said, quote, "The wise and moral man